Hello, my fine friends, and welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined as ever with Adam Stoker.
Hey, everybody. Excited to be here, and I don't want Stuart to give me a hard time about my level of excitement, so I just want you all to know that I am beyond thrilled for today's episode.
That is perfect. It only took you 10 episodes or so to get it. We're in the double digits now, but you finally mastered. I mean, it's not like you're a professional host or anything that you haven't been doing. How many episodes of your podcast, Destination
Just
Podcast?
350 or something like that.
Okay. So by now you should have figured it out, and you did. So that's good. But this is a monumental episode because we've got our first repeat guest on the show. This is unprecedented territory. We loved you so much. By popular demand from our audience of dozens of listeners, you're back, Will Seckham. Welcome back to the show.
I'd like to welcome both of our listeners back.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think one of them might be on vacation. We might be back to a single listener. We're not sure.
If you are that listener.
My mom's traveling right now.
That's right. Yeah. I think my wife might be not listening anymore. She probably listened to the first one. I don't know. But if you are that one listener, we'd love you to leave a review or submit a comment or tell us a subject that you want to be in. This is a community we're trying to build where we feel like it's a love letter to the industry. And so today we're going to have a real good session because we're going to talk about some potentially controversial things. We're going to talk about accountability, which is something that is sometimes shied away from by certain corners of the industry. And so we're going to do our Stu's News, and then we're going to talk about something that I know, Will, you've been very vocal about recently, and that's Doge. And that's not do only good every day. That is this trend that's happening in the government right now. The Department of
Government Efficiency.
Government Efficiency. Yeah. So we've heard a lot from Elon and Vivek about what they're going to do and some of the bloat and the wasted money. I think we can all agree that there's opportunity for efficiency in government, right? I think that should be a non-controversial statement. But we're going to talk about what the implications of that are for our industry. And so I'm excited. I might take a contrarian view today. I'm feeling a little sassy. So we'll see how that goes. But let's jump in. Before we do, let's talk about the best segment in all of Destination Marketing. Jingle to come. And Adam, by the way, I went back and I was editing some of the episodes, and I listened back to the first episode, and I was the one that suggested we should do a jingle. So just that is official canon. So if it ever happens, it was my idea. If it never happens, it was your
okay.
idea.
Okay. So all right. So if the jingle comes to fruition after all my hard work, it is Stuart who should get the credit for that.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Got it.
So as long as we're on the same page, but this is that segment. This is Stu's News. So I'm going to share my screen real quick. We are going to talk about an article here. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about an article here. It's about Arizona and some controversy that happened there. We're not necessarily going to talk specifically about the individuals involved in this, but there were some claims made, some resignations given in. And a headline that is, I don't know, this is a painful headline for us to read, but it's basically accusing the Arizona tourism head. They resigned after being accused of spending $700,000 on a logo and some other accusations about whether the use of that money was appropriate and the company that money went to was appropriate. And again, I don't want to get into the specifics of the case. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty. And we're going to assume the best of everyone. But the headline, man, and some of the rhetoric that came out of this article, I don't know, Adam, you want to jump in and talk about what some of these representatives were saying after this came to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, the first observation I had is I think I've been severely undercharging for my services. Just like step one, I think there's some major adjustments that I have to make in my organization if other organizations are getting $700,000 for a logo. But the thing that I wanted to talk about here, there's a couple of them, and maybe this isn't where you thought I was going to go, but I do think one of the issues that this process illustrates Is that there is a problem with our procurement process in this industry. And that's the fact that we have this RFP process and we invite a bunch of vendors to contribute dozens of unpaid hours to put together these RFP responses. And then to find out that there are organizations who have family members who are awarded these contracts and things like that, it gets really, really painful for a vendor that donated a bunch of hours when in reality it went to an existing relationship. And so I do think we need to take a really close look at the procurement process in the destination marketing industry and make sure that these vendors who are putting in all this work to respond to RFPs are getting a fair shake. And I think the program was designed with the best of intentions because the RFP process has a lot of guardrails in place to make sure that it's a fair process. But in reality, I think in a lot of cases, it ends up in a situation where the relationship, the prior existing relationship, gave it the best chance of winning. That being said, the rhetoric in response to this is kind of aggressive. And the worst part to me, and we're going to get into DOGE today, as far as it affects the industry, is the timing of this. Because the timing of a headline like this, right when efficiency and cost cutting and all these other initiatives related to DOGE are coming into play, I think it's a painful thing for the industry to have this kind of scrutiny at this time. And a headline like that will definitely contribute to extending this theme of cost cutting and efficiency over to the destination marketing industry. And I just wanted to read one of the quotes in here, because one of the people that was responding to this story said, "People make fun of why a hammer costs $1,500 if the government buys it versus 15 bucks at Ace Hardware. This is government bloat," Martinez continued. "This is waste and fraud and abuse. This is not a good thing." And when you've got language like that out there around destination marketing organizations, it really makes me nervous for what this is going to do to the funding for a lot of the organizations that are out there. And I think this is why it's so critical to have a procurement process with integrity attached to it, because whether or not the things that are accused in this story are true, what it does to the industry as a whole is really painful.
Yeah. Will, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason this article struck me so much is just the again, the lexicon that we talk about and the words that were used more than the story, because I agree with you, Stuart. It's way too early. There's way too many things in there. And I can, kind of support any destination. You know, somebody gets something under their craw and doesn't like the agency process, doesn't like the selection of this, doesn't like the spend of money on that, or the priority here, or the priority there, and they can raise a stink, and it gets into the media, and media is more than likely to jump on that and create controversy. And we know that, we see that. And I think 99.999% of decisions made by DMOs across the country and around the world are done for the right reasons and done, you know, with the best of intent. I think the thing that concerns me the most is, again, the language used: government bloat, waste, fraud, abuse. These really words that carry very, very negative intentions, and I think that's kind of the message that I'm here to kind of raise: is this isn't a, you know, DOGE is not bringing new audits. Again, DMOs are used to doing their annual audits and working with their auditors and going through the process and the expenses and tracking budgets and tracking expenditures and documentation. I mean, I think by and large, DMOs are great at that and get prepared and do the annual process. And that's one thing. I think the question here is what happens when that is the police start coming with negative intent, and that's a totally different ballgame.
Yeah. I think that's the concern, right? Is regardless of the validity of the claims, the accusations are made, and that's what people are going to read. They're going to read a headline, and anyone that reads a headline that says the state of Arizona spent $700,000 of a logo, they're not going to spend the time to dig into what that means. And it was probably a full brand plan and an execution and a lot more that, you know, let's assume the value was there of what they received. No one's going to take the time to understand that nuance. Because the person's name is the same as the agency, even if there's nothing untoward, people are going to assume there is. The accusations are going to continue to fly. What we've seen, what you've seen more than most, Will, is all it takes is one disgruntled government official that's running on a new platform and looking for something to cling on to, and they're gonna ride that all the way to their elected seat. And so it's really, really dangerous. So I think we as destinations have to be beyond reproach. Yes, we have to do audits. Yes, we have to do everything, but we need to go beyond the mandated requirements, and we have to be beyond reproach to a level that no one is really should have to do, but it's necessary for us for our long-term survival. I mean, we as an organization were accused of some insider stuff several years ago. And there was no validity to it. Ultimately, all the claims were dropped, but the smoke that was there still lingers, right? People still remember that there was the accusations, and they didn't spend the time to go back and see, oh, they were baseless. There's no validity to it. It's stigma that sticks with you for a prolonged period. And so I think we've got to be really careful. Now, I will say, to your point, Adam, the RFP process, I hate it with a passion. I mean, it's so inefficient in and of itself, but it is necessary. We should do a whole episode on what's wrong with RFPs, because there's a lot of things wrong with RFPs. But I
I'm
think
in. It might need to be a 2-hour episode.
it might. But at the basic level, I think you've got to make sure that it's a balanced panel, whoever's making the decision, that is a mixture, and that it's not weighted too much to the team side, the internal team side, or to the board side, if your board is represented on those. But I think that's one of those checks and balances that prevents this kind of thing. You should never be giving business to a vendor, especially if it's above, a certain threshold, and $700,000 is certainly above a certain threshold. So I don't know. I like to think, when I go into any kind of potential situation, right? I've used the phrase a lot with you before, Adam, but when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck. I didn't create that. That was a French philosopher called Paul Virilio, I think his name was, but my good friend Tim Peter was the one that shared it with me. But when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck, and that's always, there's unforeseen circumstances. Even if you have the best of intentions in everything you do, there's unforeseen circumstances. And I'm sure Arizona went into this with the best of intentions, but we got to think about what are our potential shipwrecks. And one of those shipwrecks is, what's the headline? What's the most aggressive version of the truth that could get written in the news? That headline we need to make sure can never be written, right? And so that's a situation that could have been avoided if someone had just stopped and said, even though there's nothing wrong with this, we probably shouldn't go that route, because that headline is, that's what people will remember. It sticks with you. So yeah, that's a tough one. But let's transition. Let's start talking about the Department of Government Efficiency and what that means. And so, Will, I'm going to turn the floor over to you and sort of state your case, and tell us a little bit about why you've really, I'd say you've got a bee in your bonnet about this one, right? This is something you've been very vocal about, and really the singular voice in the industry thus far that I've seen really talking about this. So give us that. What was the catalyst for you? And then give us your sort of frame your argument for this.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think when we start to see just the high profile nature of what's going to happen at the federal government and the quick timing, and again, the language that is being used. The language that is being used. Oh, hold on.
So, for those listening, Will's got a dog that's barking. So I think he's letting it out of the office there. I wanted to make sure that if it's audio
I
only,
was thinking
nobody's confused.
Elon was knocking on his door, I'm pretty sure. He's coming around to investigate how he's spending the money from DMOs.
I apologize for the edit requirement there. We have family guests around for the holidays.
No, you're good, man. There's no editing on this
Yeah,
show.
there will be
Everyone's
no
going to get to
edits.
enjoy that. You're good.
Excellent.
Everyone
Okay,
knows.
so let's go back to DOGE and the high profile nature and the big charge, right? I mean, this is coming on the heels of a really incredibly highly contested election. The drama that's been going around that for years, the Make America Great Again, the transition of Elon from, left into center and to efficiencies, and just the work that that man has done across space, across social, I mean, across so many different areas. He's definitely a visionary with big ideas and big, bold plays. And when he started looking at the announcement of he and Vivek teaming up to lead this, and some of their initial conversations, right, about we're doing a leaderboard of the most egregious government waste. Well, I think, Stuart, you kicked this all off. I mean, if that is the goal and we're off looking for it, it should not be hard to find, right? The Arizona Republican whip that was quoted in that article saying, this is a $1,500 hammer that the government, wastes our money when we could buy it for $1,500. We've all heard those stories. It's gone around in the world of politics for years and years and years and years. And I guess, why is this different and why has it gotten my attention? Looking back 45 years, Ronald Reagan started a program called the Grace Commission, and they had, in great government form to go and understand and figure out ways to cut back government waste and government spending and get rid of this massive debt that the federal government has. Grace Commission now did hundreds of committee meetings and all sorts of things happening. Boulder quit. All sorts of meetings happening, and they came back and really weren't able to accomplish a lot, right? I mean, because they could have their meetings, they could have their reports, they could do all the great things that a government committees do and roll up all the committee reports and all that, and it didn't accomplish a lot because they didn't have access to the media. Well, lo and behold, Elon Musk bought X, just in advance of this, and become a very vocal kind of proponent of trimming government waste and creating efficiencies and maximizing effectiveness and optimization. And it's not just financial. And I think that's the thing that has really gotten my attention. Yes, they're going to come in with this audacious goal of cutting $2 trillion out of a $6 trillion federal budget. That's big. They're talking about getting rid of entire government agencies like the Department of Education. That's big. They're talking about going into FDA and eliminating entire sections of government operations. I mean, these are big, bold, progressive ideas that are getting a lot of media attention. And with the two people leading the charge and with President-elect Trump coming on board, these are media magnets. If nothing else, they know how to get the attention of the media. We've all watched politics. We've dealt with politics at the federal level, the state level, the local level. And one thing that politicians are really good at, and what do they want more than a vote? They want a headline. And so when you know that your election is coming up in 2 years, and now everybody is on the clock for, 2026. What's next? What's the next seat? Is it a re-election at this local level? Am I going for a county job? Am I going for a state house job? Am I going for a, what's the next level and how do you get attention? And there's no surprise that many of the issues that come up with and get traction with the MOs and the media for things like this are happening in election years. That's when people are really focused on getting their name out there. So I don't think it matters if you're in a county that has, total balance. We're all R's in our county commission, or we're all D's in our local. It doesn't really matter because at least in my experience, when you have kind of one party control, the battles become even more aggressive. So again, I think the idea, the concept of cleaning out government, of finding waste is one thing. The fact that it's going to happen at the federal level with massive amplifications, the fact that it's not just going through and looking at budgets, it's looking at efficiencies and wastes and, all these big bad words, again, fraud, abuse. So it's going, these audits are not your typical audit that a DMO is used to, and with the normal people that a DMO are used to working with, and the normal relationships that you have with your city council and the leaders that are helping advise and support them, or the mayor and the team that's around them that have become your advocates and your friends. This is going to come from a totally different place. And all of a sudden, you're going to get an auditor that's going to come in, not just looking at your audited financial reports, which are going to be, again, 99.999% of the time are going to be clean, good, positive results of, good systems in place. But when those auditors are coming in and capturing attention at the federal level, and they start, you get somebody at the state level that wants to do it at the state level, or somebody at the county level, or somebody at the city that says, "Hey, we can clean up our, we can clean up our operation as well." And it's getting publicity, so that's going to be a good thing. We'll be, noted for, the efficiency efforts that we've done. They're gonna assign this kind of DOGE-like audit process to the state and local level. And the people that are going to be doing it are not going to be friendlies, right? They're going to be incentivized to find waste, fraud, abuse.
Right.
And
They've got to
that's a
justify
totally
their
different mindset.
existence. So I think the pendulum, I mean, it's inevitable that the pendulum is swinging, right? So this mindset of finding efficiencies is going to take root in our culture, not just government. I think the where the battle is going to be fought is more the court of public opinion than it is in the auditors, right? You can have a clean audit, but if the court of public opinion perceives something that is wrong, then that's what's going to basically impact our budget. Because now, I mean, let's take the Arizona case. If someone investigates and finds nothing was done wrong, it doesn't matter because this headline still exists, these quotes from these elected officials still exist. And guess what? Next year's budget, when they're debating how much to give to the state, there's going to be people saying it should be less, right? Right, wrong, or indifferent. That's going to happen. So I don't know that the clean audits are really the big battleground. I think it's the court of public opinion. But Adam, I'd love for you to respond to what Will said and position yourself. Do you agree with him? Do you disagree?
I'm a little bit of both, right? And the reason I say that is I'm not going to opine on whether or not there's massive waste or things like that in our industry that needs to be cleaned up. Although by the end of this conversation, I may actually opine. But I think my thought right now is we've all, like, there's nothing new about people questioning the budgets that are going to DMOs. Most DMOs have at least one problem stakeholder that is fighting them on budget and how it's allocated and how they spend it and all that kind of stuff. The difference here is that the Overton window has moved, where the idea of calling out government bloat was not popular or as publicly as acceptable as it is today. I mean, if you actually go look at some of Elon and Vivek's tweets related to the Department of Government Efficiency and the things that they've found, if you question whether or not it's getting traction, look at the comments section of each of those tweets. And whether they're right or wrong about what they're finding, whether they're whether some of these are just hyperbole or if they're truly real programs that they've found, the public is done with the perception of government bloat. And that is very apparent in the responses to these comments. And so if the Overton window has moved to where it's now cool to question government spending, what you're not going to be dealing with is one stakeholder. You're going to be dealing with multiple stakeholders and a public who are demanding efficiency. So I think the question for every DMO here, as I see it, is if it's about to be cool to question everything that you do, what measures can you take right now to prepare for that? And I don't, like I said, I don't necessarily think there's a ton of waste. Complacency may be a different story. I do think there's some complacency that can be perceived as waste, but I don't think there's a ton of waste. And so in that, I think organizations need to get much more transparent, much more prepared to demonstrate how that money is being spent and be prepared to justify that to the public because the public is coming.
And Adam, I think it's important to acknowledge that this isn't this the red flag that I'm waving isn't just for DMOs, right? I mean, the same auditors that are going to be coming after the DMO are going to be coming after the Department of public service and
economic development,
parks and rec and transportation and police and firemen. So they're going to be looking at everything. This is not going to be done in a window or in a vacuum. But the reality is it is going to be done, and it's going to be aggressive. It's going to follow the federal level. It's going to be aggressive. It's going to be, you know, in your face. It's going to be looking for negativity. And so,
well,
to
but
your
tourism
point,
tourism will be high on that list because of the size of the budgets. Even though it goes so many different places, just the line item itself is going to be super high on the budget. So, from a priority standpoint, I don't think we're waiting till after the police or the fire. I think we're going to be pretty high on the list.
And we're high profile, right? And so you're high profile. You have do cool things. This isn't buying the hammers. And you can go through the RFP process for how they're buying their hammers, and it's much more arbitrary, and it's marketing, and there's a lot of psychological issues that go into all of that. So it's high profile. It's going to get attention. I guess my biggest thing is be ready, because when it comes, it's like nothing that's ever come before. Because I think there's a lot, to your point on the Overton window, there's a lot of momentum that's going to be built. It hadn't even started yet. And we're going to start seeing early wins, or at least early challenges at the federal level. That's just going to open up the doors for more of this at the state and local levels, and faster than we're actually anticipating.
Yeah. So let me come at this from a different angle, because I think when Adam first suggested, I think he'd seen some of the posts you'd made and suggested we do an episode on this. I was a little apprehensive. And one of the reasons is, like, I'm a big believer in the Streisand effect. For those of you that don't know the Streisand effect, that are listening, the one person that's listening, this happened several years ago, where someone published a photo of Barbara Streisand's house and her address online. And so she was very mad about this as a privacy thing. So she tried to take that person to court and sue them. And significantly more people became aware of her address because of her actions, right? So had she just left this random blogger alone, maybe 50 people would have seen her address. But then when Barbara Streisand sues someone, now hundreds of thousands of people see her address. So the Streisand effect is that where you're trying to prevent something from happening, and your action in doing so exacerbates the likelihood or increases the likelihood that it's going to happen. So part of my concern here is, is that obviously not on this show because we only get one listener, but by us as an industry talking about this a lot, does it put a target on our back, right? So I think that's one concern I have. I mean, ultimately, I think it's, if we're beyond reproach and we do the things we're going to do, I think we should welcome the target on our back and say, bring it on, let us justify our existence because we know we provide value. So that's where I want to shift to. So I don't think it's about, like, we've talked a lot about the audits and the things like the things we should be doing to become beyond reproach. Where we should probably focus our efforts are on the value we drive to our communities. And we should be talking about that mostly, right? Because if we have enough support, if we are ingrained in that shared value of our community, and we have enough people saying, no, these guys provide value to me individually, to my business, to these communities within our greater community, then it prevents that one or two loud people from really getting a foothold, right? So I think this is like when some DMOs I've seen focus so much on their revenue, right? They spend like that. I've seen CMOs that spend 70% of their time focused on protecting their revenue and only 30% on promoting the destination. And to me, it's like, if you're a CMO, you should spend 90% of your time on promoting the destination, because if you do that well, it takes care of the other part. And I wonder if that's where we should be focused as a destination. We've talked a lot about the sort of the risk side, but what about the, let's defend our position by just being kick-ass DMOs and doing a really good job for our community, and spending our money efficiently, obviously. And then we're not going to be on that list, because if you do look at the list of what Doge is going after right now, it's ridiculous stuff, right? They're finding extreme cases. Like,
yeah,
I forget the specific numbers, but there's a museum for traffic cones, right? And it was spending millions of dollars a year, and three or four people went to visit this museum in 2024, you know? And yeah. so everyone universally is going to get behind, okay, that's probably not the best use of millions of dollars. And there's a handful of those cases that they publicly released on their hit list, right? And so hopefully if we provide enough value to our community, we're going to be so far down the hit list that we're going to be on reproach. But we got to be careful, because we are, by talking about it, we're creating that Streisand effect. So that's my concern, and I'll push back to you, Will.
Yeah, no, I think the Streisand effect is legit. And seriously, when you come out and you kind of raise a red flag, I think the risk of the ostrich effect is worse, right? If we put our heads in the sand and don't think that this is coming, I think we're facing a huge risk as an industry, and I think as any organization at any level, and that is accepting even a nickel of money that comes through the government, is taking a risk if they're not taking this very aggressively, very proactively, to get prepared and to acknowledge that, yes, we do exceptional work. Here's a couple things that are going to come up. The language that we use is really rough, right? The DMO language is a language in and of itself. Our KPIs, what we find successful. I mean, we use these languages and terms in destination marketing that I think don't necessarily translate well across media, or certainly don't across bureaucracy. So it's almost like you need a babblefish, right? How do I translate what the KPIs of success in doing the work that DMOs do for the long-term good of the community? Let's use an example of a fam trip, right? Okay, so we know that we're going to create media value. We're going to create, you know, extraordinary value for the investment that we do. It's against a target audience. It's against, you know, we've got really good solid strategies of why we're doing this initiative. And we can go across the board, any initiative, but we're using a different language to describe success, different long-term impacts of that investment that are going to drive long-term success for our communities. We have to be able to articulate that in a way that's going to go across and really be embraced by either that reporter or that government person that's coming in to ask you the question. And I think a lot of that is having predefined demonstrated goals, objectives, and measurements on every single thing that we do. I think that's a big piece of it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the industry is shifting as well to understand, and this is certainly not an idea that we're pushing out for the first time. A lot of folks have said this, but it's tying the data to stories, right, is so imperative. I know Bill Geist has spoken about this a lot. Others in the industry have spoken a lot. But the anecdotes that come from individuals that have been directly impacted by the work are way more powerful at communicating the value that we're providing to these elected officials. And so we're really exploring that right now at Visit Myrtle Beach. And how do we incorporate our stakeholders that are deriving the value in a more meaningful way in our storytelling of our value and putting them in front of elected officials? So maybe when we go to a city council meeting, it shouldn't just be the team from Visit Myrtle Beach up there talking about how great we are. Let's bring an attraction or an accommodation or a restaurant that is directly benefited from our work and talk about how the work we did to stop them from going under, you know, or help them grow their business and things like that. The stories, I mean, humans will always remember that, right? They'll remember how you made them feel, not what you said, to quote Maya Angelou. But we don't do enough storytelling. You know, the data is sort of the starting point. We should use the data to construct our narratives and then communicate that through stories. I think that's the most effective way to communicate our value proposition. Yeah, you probably disagree. You don't like stories told.
To that point, one of the most impactful support I've ever seen for a DMO came from a brew pub owner. And the brew pub owner said, hey, listen, I've invested a ton in this community. It was very impactful community leader. And he said, you know, I get about 5% of my visitors to the brew pub are from out of state. He said, you know, that's not it's 5 to 10%, because that's not a big percentage. He said, the difference is that 5 to 10% is the difference between me making money and going out of business and the community losing that value. Made a very compelling point about the impact of tourism on a community that was growing. ended up running and becoming mayor, governor, and he's now a senator representing the state of
Wow.
Colorado. But that was his first foray into politics, was saying, this is tourism impacts my business in a way that impacts our community. You know, this brew pub's gone, the jobs are gone, the community gathering spot is gone if it weren't for the visitors that attend. So I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you anymore, Stuart, on the power of getting community involved as the advocates in deep, meaningful ways, because I think that's undeniably the most powerful tool we have. I think the challenge when you get to an audit scenario, and again, why I keep raising the flag, is you kind of lose that avenue, right? All of a sudden, it's backroom conversations. You're not in front of the public so much. This is a, you know, behind the scenes with an auditor looking to poke
Yeah, but
holes.
again, I don't think the audit's the threat, right? Because the audit, if you don't have a clean audit, you're in trouble regardless of whether DOGE exists or not, right? So I don't think that's a new threat, let's say. So I think you've got to that's table stakes. You've got to take care of the audit and do the things that you're empowered to do and expected to do by the community. That's not where DOGE is going to have an impact. It's not on the audit, I don't think. I think it's in the court of public opinion, and that's what we're seeing play out on X right now. Adam, I'll give you a chance. You've been quiet for a little bit. Let's get your take on this.
I think, Will, you've done a good job of raising what the issue is going to be. There's no question that efficiency, waste, abuse, all that kind of stuff is going to be, it's going to become very, very popular terms over the next little bit. Stuart, I think your focus on, well, yes, but that's why we have to communicate our value, not necessarily spend an incredible amount of time or money to prepare for an audit that may or may not come. The court of public opinion, like you said, is the most important thing. And so this is where I think the how of it all is. I see so many destinations that neglect communicating with their own community. They don't share their wins, except for maybe in an annual chamber meeting or something like that. They do very little to essentially influence the public opinion within their own destination. And you know, if it's becoming cool to talk about efficiency and government waste, that means you have to make it not cool in your community to come after you and say that you are the one wasting money. And the way to do that, I think, is by messaging to your community with a very intentional, both owned, or I guess it's not both because it's more than that, but owned, earned, and shared media strategy. And Stuart, you guys have done something really interesting in Myrtle Beach. You guys have built what you call your content army. And this is content creators within Myrtle Beach who essentially help you promote the destination through content creation. And I wonder if every destination also needs a local content army whose audience is the local community that can help amplify the message of the value they're bringing to the community. Because if you make it where it's not cool to criticize the destination marketing organization in the community, there's not going to be the stakeholders, politicians, and others that decide that's going to be the platform that they want to run on. And so I think we need a much more intentional local public opinion effort in each of our destinations and communities. And I think that's going to do a lot to influence whether or not DOGE becomes a major problem for destinations.
Yeah, every destination should invest time and energy in building ambassadors, right? And that can take many forms. I mean, your board is a form of ambassador, equipping them with the talking points and the knowledge so they can make salient arguments. But for us, what we did is, we contracted people directly to help us create content, but we selected people, and a lot of times that have an audience already. And that's something we're actually looking to expand. I mean, and that's really, there's no limit to that. Anyone that has a captive audience locally, that could be your local weatherman or news anchor, right? And bring them into the team. Show them what's under the engine and get them educated on the value of tourism and what you're providing, and give them the talking points so they become a mouthpiece for your organization. And not in a propagandistic way, that's not a word, in a propaganda way, but in a genuine, authentic way that they believe in the cause. And I think if it's cool to criticize inefficiency, we can also make it cool to celebrate efficiency. And so let's focus on that. Let's showcase these wins where we haven't spent a ton of money to do something really impactful. Or maybe we did spend a lot, but it's so impactful that the return is, the value is there, right? And so I think that's got to be our focus, is educating a local community on the value we provide and having those people, not just us, tell that story to not just elected officials, but the voters in our community too. Because it takes the two things, right? It takes one person to be vocal against you, and then it takes the people to vote for that person. So you gotta tackle both sides of that. I mean, you're always gonna have the crazy people that run against you, the anti-tax kind of folks that don't want any tax dollars being spent on tourism. But they don't typically get a foothold in a community unless there's some outrageous scandal that's gone on. So you're always going to get some people running. Let's focus on educating the community, especially the voters, especially as stakeholders and our ambassadors, and then they can be that machine that tells the story of the value that we drive.
Now, to Will's point, if you have bloat or inefficiency in the way you are spending the dollars that are allocated through transient room tax or other methods, you got to get rid of it. Like that, this is where, Will, I don't want to sound like we're devaluing what you're saying, because anyone that has bloat, and I would say the bloat that's kind of silent in the industry right now is the complacent marketing strategies where we're doing the same paid media plan that we're doing every year. And of course, this is my platform, right? Like I talk about that all the time. So I'm incentivized to say this. And so I don't want to make it sound disingenuous. But if you are running these lazy paid media strategies and not doing true storytelling and relationship building with your audience, when the auditor does come in, yes, they're going to identify that as bloat. And if you're spending $700,000 on something that largely throughout the industry would be viewed as bloat, you're going to be criticized for that. So I do think there's value in proactively looking at the way you're spending money and shoring up any inefficiencies that are there. I think that is something that needs to happen.
So Adam, are you suggesting we should create our own czar of Doge within our organization to go after the inefficiencies? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think czar is a strong word, because there's been some debate over the last couple of years whether or not that's a real role or an effective role. But I do think that everybody needs to, and I think it probably should start with whoever the senior financial person is, to internally audit budgets and make sure you're being efficient.
But one of the things we do, go ahead, Will.
Oh, Stuart, I think it's more than budgets. And I think that's the only thing that we're missing, because it's budgets, it's efficiencies, it's perceptions, it's language, it's so much. And I think to Adam's point about, if you're just doing things the way you've always done them, it's time to go back and re-examine what the impacts of those are, right? We've always done this event because it's, you know, our partners love it, and it's been good ROI for us over the years because our partners love it and they want to be a part of it. All right, so we've done it forever. It's kind of a line item. It's an automatic, you know, approval as we go through our board. Our committees are aware of it. They know that people love it. Our board knows that we've been doing it forever. We've kind of built that cadence. But I think it's all of those issues. You go back and go, all right, what exactly are we getting from this? And document that. All right, it's partner engagement. That's huge. Partner investment. That's huge. We're getting leads. We're getting, you know, what exactly we're getting and what is that turning back to the community?
Yeah. And can we measure it, right? Can we quantify
that? How do we measure it? Yeah. And what are the anticipated results that we expect to get from this expenditure? And why is that good for our community? And tying up every single project that we do back to benefits to the community. So when that media person comes calling on a lead that somebody leaked to them, you can articulately address the impact of that program to the local community, to the voters, to everybody in there. Not just, it's something we've always done, it's a really important event, it's this, it's that. It's, here's what that event, that expenditure does to come back and help benefit our community, and doing that line by line. And I think this is, again, the opportunity to go back through and prep yourself for everything. Again, assuming nobody knows anything about all the programs, they don't know the language, they don't know the market, they don't know this is a receptive tour operator. Well, what does a receptive tour operator do? Well, it works with a, you know, destination management firm. What does that person do? I mean, you've almost got to explain the entirety of every single component of our business. And if we've been doing it, this doing things the way we've been doing them for a long time and kind of become settled, I think now's the time to go back and look at all those settled line items or initiatives and say, what are the actual impacts on the ground in the market today?
And maybe it's too late for this year, but I certainly think as you look at next, it depends if you're on an annual or fiscal kind of budget, but we're on an annual budget, so our budget's pretty much finalized this year. But one of the things we do is we try to do a zero-based budget. Now, that's not the case for every department and everything we do, but for a lot of it, we try to say, rather than just pulling over that same number from last year, we try to say, okay, if we're starting from scratch, if this was that day one mentality that Amazon likes to employ, what would we do? And that forces us to have the conversation and question everything. Do we need this much money in this line item? What will we use this for this year? Not what did we use it for last year, what will we use it for this year? And so I think we have to have more of that critical thinking and bake that into the process. A lot of times we sort of rush through that budget process and towards the end of our year, whether that's calendar or fiscal, and we start with last year's budget. And I just think that has to go out of the window given this current environment. We have to
Hey,
start with a
Stuart, I've
zero-based
got a
budget.
question for you in that process. I know the answer for me. How many times when you did that, did the budget by department come back less than it was the year before?
Yeah, no,
Zero.
not very often for sure, right?
Yeah,
I
all right.
mean,
Start at zero level budget. We got no more money, but we're going to really prioritize so everybody comes back with a 25% increase that you end up cutting back
Now,
anyway.
to be fair, we sort of work into our overall budget. So the way we work it is we sort of predict what our revenue is going to be the next 12 months based on, tax revenues and such. Then we allocate by a percentage to departments, and then the department is asked to hit a number, right? But they're obviously the first dollars you spend are more efficient than the last dollars you spend, typically speaking, right? And so that's the way we need to work. And I think it's probably not in our interest as an industry to get to the point where we're like, oh no, I spent every penny I can as efficiently as I can, and I don't need any more money. Because I would argue every DMO is underfunded, right? Regardless whether you're like a Vegas with $300 million or you have a $200,000 budget, you could spend more money efficiently if you planned right and you executed right. So I don't think it's a question of the amount of money. I think it's just, is every penny being invested as wisely as that penny can be invested? And that's what the zero-based budget allows us to do, at least. So, all right, we're running out of time here, Will. Any final thoughts, any takeaways, anything you want people to really definitely hear from the message that you're singing from the rooftops?
No, I just think it's important to use this time in advance of what I think is going to be craziness coming again from the federal level. It's going to slip to the state and the local level. Is to really button up and get prepared. Really put yourself in kind of a defensive mindset of how do I defend everything that I'm doing and why it's a benefit to the community. I think it's a huge risk. Anytime everybody's going to be questioned all across the country and not just DMOs, but other government agencies. But I think it's also a huge opportunity for DMOs to really rise and shine because the work is, there's no question that the work is massively impactful for communities. It's a net positive all the way around, whatever destinations are doing. And I think now is just the time to really be prepared for an antagonistic kind of aggressive assault against us. And I think there's a huge no reason we can't come out on top.
Great. Adam, final thoughts?
It's cool to question government efficiency, but if you proactively build a relationship with the community and have influence proactively on public opinion, they won't come for you.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, Will. I think you said it's time to be on defense. I often think the best form of defense is offense. I think now's the time for us to really go on offense in terms of our community shared value, really building those ambassadors, getting the community to understand the value through storytelling, and make sure that you have a defensive wall around you by being on offense. Like
And that's
that,
why you're
I
a big
think that's
Chelsea
where we're going.
fan, right?
Get out of here. That is not Chelsea us here. That is.
Nothing better, no better defense than a great offense. And I couldn't agree. I think it's taking it seriously, being prepared for what's coming down the pike, and being aggressive about the great work that you do.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure. We may have to make a hat trick of this and have you on a third time. So if you have another topic you want to chat about at a later date, we'd love to have you back on. In the meantime, if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Just go to LinkedIn, Will Seckham at linkedin.com.
Great. And Adam.
Adam Stoker on LinkedIn, or find me on Tourism IQ.
Great. And you can find me at stuart.butler@visitmetalbeach.com or on LinkedIn. I'm there as well. And so lurking around, haven't posted in a little while, but I need to get back to that. But if you've enjoyed this, if the one listener that's paying attention has enjoyed this, please subscribe, please review, tell other people find the show. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Help us out,
Cheers.
Mom. Leave that review.
Hey, Will, if Doge comes after us and we all get defunded, I'm totally going to blame you.
Blame me? Okay.
Yeah, Barbara.
Call me Barbara. Fair enough. Fair enough.